Thank you. He's a 25-year-old white male from Texas. He was recently brought back from Afghanistan and then went home to see his father, who was ailing. He ostensibly went home to take care of his family. He began noticing he was having blackouts. He would drink up to a half a bottle of whiskey a night. His wife became concerned, when particularly the night that he woke up strangling her. They called a hotline and were able to reach the Civilian Medical Resource Network. Unfortunately, we were fairly late in the progression of his illness. He refused to seek services at the VA, concerned that he would lose any benefits that might be available to him for coming back from the war. He ultimately ended up in jail, and now he will receive no benefits and no treatment other than civilian services. This is an example. This is just one example of many individuals who Ira Katz even talked about, that veterans and active duty personnel who should seek services within military installations don't. Yet many of these individuals are the most in need, yet least likely to receive the appropriate care that they deserve. So our presentation, first of all, Drs. Cruz and Waitzkin have no relationships to disclose at this present time. But our learning objectives are to describe the characteristics of active duty GIs and veterans who seek civilian health and mental health services, to explore the relationships between their selected characteristics, to begin to understand their reasons for seeking civilian health and mental health services, and ultimately to analyze how such services may ultimately contribute to peace. For the individual, war has adverse impacts on not just their mental health, but their physical health. Many studies have shown that individuals under the age of 25 have lower education rates once returning from war, and also higher unemployment rates. And lastly, the quality of life, not just for that particular individual, but for their families, decreases. For society, we have to deal with the burden of homelessness for these individuals, public safety, although now I'm going to question that after the last study, incurred health care costs, shifting of costs, not from the military system, ultimately to the public health service system. Yet in the public health service system, I don't think we have the adequate tools necessary at this time to help this population because of the specific issues that they present with. And last, the United States as a whole loses the loss in their creative potential as individuals. Thomas More said it best, I think, from his book Utopia, that society suffers when the punishment of military misconduct trumps the demonstrated need for mental health treatment. So this data was captured through the Civilian Medical Resource Network. The objectives of the network are to provide civilian medical or mental health evaluations and treatment for people serving on active duty with the military. The activities may include counseling by phone and referrals to professionals who work in the GI's geographical area. The professionals who conduct the evaluations do so at no or reduced charge if the GI does not have usable insurance coverage and cannot afford to pay customary fees. And lastly, its second goal is to collaborate with the GI Rights Hotline, the Military Law Task Force, and other organizations for outreach to improve medical and psychological services in the civilian sector for active duty GIs. I should say all of the individuals who work within the Civilian Medical Resource Network do it on a voluntary basis. And so there are a number of people across the country who have provided time, extensive time actually, to provide for the health and well-being of active duty GIs who unfortunately do not feel that they can seek out services through normal military channels. Our sample. We did a multi-method approach and looked at quantitative data using 76 CMRN complete client records between 2009 and 2011. That is, was roughly about 56% of all the individuals who of client records within that period of time. The qualitative data was from 27 randomly selected CMRN client records between 2009 and 2012. An iterative thematic analysis was performed where saturation was reached at 23 client interviews. We did four more just to make sure that saturation had been reached. Our two coders were both military veterans, one of them, Al Rendell. Dr. Rendell, would you mind standing up? Dr. Rendell was one of our coders, as well as another gentleman by the name of Jeff Englehart. And we felt that it was important to use coders who had military background because the idioms of distress of the military may be uniquely different than for civilians. Results. From a demographic standpoint, our sample was predominantly male, between the ages of 18 and 30 years, white, in the Army, of enlisted pay grade, and fairly well educated. 25% of our sample was absent without leave at the time we did the evaluations. Other characteristics that we felt were important were 42% of this group reported pre-military trauma. Now, pre-military trauma was really defined by the individual, and that ranged from witness to violence, victim of violence, either be that domestic or otherwise, sexual assault, rape, or child abuse. 72% did report military trauma. Of that group, 30% reported it being combat-related, and 42% reported it being non-combat-related. And lastly, 42% of the group self-reported that they did not trust their commanding officer to help them with their health needs. Secondly, we did some bivariate analyses looking at all of these demographic characteristics with respect to certain dependent variables, outcome variables. Within the CMRN system is a web-based application, and so individuals can go into a portal, and I can then collect all the data, download all the data that is collected from our intake coordinators who are actually dispersed throughout the country. And so we used the PrimeMD and the Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Checklist military version to collect more standardized information. So we looked at some of the characteristics that were found in bivariate analyses to be of a p-value of less than 0.1, and then we loaded them into different models with respect to certain dependent variables. In the first one, the dependent variable was trauma. And we looked at PCLC severity scores compared to several different demographic characteristics and clinical characteristics, as you see. The one thing we found was that insomnia was commonly associated with trauma severity scores, and that for combat-related trauma, not trauma in total, but just combat-related trauma, we had a stronger relationship for both alcohol use and absent without leave status. Now, I did report in the abstract, so I put this up as I made a mistake. I did report in the abstract that we found a relationship between pre-military health problems and mistrust of command with suicidal ideation. I should say that because our sample sizes were so small, we felt that the means might be distorting what is the reality of the population of individuals that seek our services. And so as such, I did bootstrap analyses afterwards. And unfortunately, suicidal ideation was not found to be related to either pre-military health problems or mistrust of command. From our qualitative data, we had a number of different themes other than these that showed barriers to seeking care. But the three that I felt were important for this presentation were a substantial number of the individuals reported that they mistrusted their command to help them adequately get health and mental health services. They also reported that there was deception in recruitment. Some individuals reported that they had acknowledged that they had previous mental health treatment or mental health related issues, yet this was not placed on their application for enlistment. This gets to the issue of not just double agency for mental health providers in the military, but for also officers in the military. For the mental health providers, again, as I said, 72% of this population had sought military treatment in the past, yet they found it be unsatisfactory to meet their needs. Is the issue of doing no harm versus ensuring the quote-unquote readiness of the troops to go to battle becoming such a conflict that the health of the individual loses out? And lastly, for the commanders, they have some responsibility. These are children. I'm sorry to say, 18 to 25 at my age now, they're kids. Don't they have a responsibility to these individuals? And particularly to one individual having to protect the life of another individual next to him. I hate to say it, some of the individuals who are on the phone with me, I would be very concerned that I would put my life in that individual's hands. Yet somehow we seem to do this, the commanders seem to do this almost every day. That to me, I think, is a problem of moral character that the U.S. really has to address. So in summary, peace, if we had it, it would ease the burden of disease dramatically, not just for the individuals who unfortunately are afflicted due to the aftermath of war, but for their families, their friends, and their communities, and as a society as a whole. We could reduce some of these ethical dilemmas that many individuals, both within the military and within the healthcare arena, are constantly confronting. And unfortunately, the incentives may allow them to resolve this difference in the wrong direction. And last, we could improve public safety as a whole. Before I end, I would like to acknowledge that funding for the study was from the Robert Wood Johnson Center for Health Policy at the University of New Mexico, and we had several acknowledgments to all the individuals who have tirelessly worked within the Civilian Medical Resource Network. Thank you.